तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोधिष्ठां स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं तदानि स्वापदन्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलम् श्रीगुरो वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साग्रजाताः सहकना रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं सापयितं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहकना लभिता श्रीशाकान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनाबन्धु जगत्पते कोटेश्वर गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते भक्तकाञ्चना गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रियै वंशाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां भावनिभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैता गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
हरे कृष्ण। I sincerely welcome everyone to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple for our Sunday festival. Today we are very grateful that His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada has so kindly sent to us one of his very dearmost disciples, who in the earliest moments of Srila Prabhupada's mission in the West, from the end of 1966, beginning of 1967, she and a small handful of others dedicated their lives, their body, mind, words, and their very souls to assist him. And the way they did it is such a great inspiration that will be a legacy for many generations to come. They risked everything to help Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, seeing how much they trusted his guidance as a representative of Krishna, he puts such great trust in them. And in doing so, we're able to start an incredible temple in San Francisco, then in London. Then was called by Srila Prabhupada to establish our mission in India, and particularly Her Grace Malati Devi Prabhu. She was the first mother giving birth to a child in Prabhupada's society. who was Prabhupada's personal cook, would lead kirtan, would preach, would organize, would manage. And today, over 40 years later, she's a great leader of our society, traveling around America, various parts of the world, helping to solve so many problems, inspiring so many people's hearts. At one time, Srila Prabhupada told his own god brothers, senior sannyasis of the Gaudiya Math, he said to them about Malati, who was serving prasad, he said, "She loves me so much that she's willing to die for my sake." And for Prabhupada to say that about a lady to the senior most staunch sannyasis on the planet was a very great tribute to her devotion. Let us welcome Malati Devi to Radha Gopinath Temple.
I'm thinking after he spoke like that, I should be quiet so that I don't show him as speaking untruth.
Nobody is worried about that.
We've been reading or hearing about Parsaram, who acted very swiftly to eradicate the influence of the misguided Kshatriyas all over the world. And in doing so, he changed the course of history at that time. And I was reflecting this morning how Srila Prabhupada was acting also in such a fearless manner against the current of a very freewheeling modern lifestyle that was exemplified very predominantly at that time by the hippie movement. Although he didn't arrive on a white horse, instead he crossed the ocean on a very old, tired freighter that was soon retired to the scrapyard. And he descended down the gangplank of that ship into an unknown environment with no one to meet or greet him. But in a very swift fashion, he captured the hearts of misguided young men and women using the weapon of truth and love. And in doing so, he eradicated the sinful enemies of pious living by establishing roots of Dharma, by introducing regulative principles, and causing a profound change individually and collectively in the lives of young people of that moment and into the present and into the future. Nobody really joined the Hare Krishna movement as a saint. But we have seen many such saints emerge. But who would imagine that a person of small stature, physically speaking, At the moment, I'm compiling memories from his remaining female disciples. And it is very interesting to note, as I do these interviews, that there are certain repeated observances and experiences that, you know, establish a pattern. And not only a pattern, but a picture that gives an accurate picture. So repeatedly you hear, upon first viewing or first seeing Srila Prabhupada, how surprised one was to see that he was not an immense personality by his physical stature. You hear how he was glowing. It's a common word. He was glowing. He was radiant. How he was not walking, or he did not appear to walk in an ordinary manner. He was gliding. Now, this becomes like commonly heard. So we can accept this was true. This was a fact. But what did this mean? Who was this person who came like that among us? And as he changed our lives in a very total manner, like turning the page when you're reading a book, you turn the page and there's a new chapter emerges. So, you know, when you turn the page from one chapter to the next, there's a closing of the old chapter, the opening of the new chapter. So his entry, or his appearance into the Western world, was the closing of a chapter in Gaudiya Vaishnava history, and it was opening a new chapter in Gaudiya Vaishnava history, but also in the lives of the first of people of the Western world. And then as the waves started coming back to the Eastern world, it began changing the lives of all the members, all the residents, all the citizens of the ancient world of India, which was fast becoming modernized. And he was doing it in a very, I could say, spontaneous manner. So not that he had any strategic planning meetings with anyone before he came. And certainly he wasn't getting any encouragement from anyone before he came, because the sadhus at that time, they considered leaving India to be something impious. You know, if you were a sadhu, you didn't leave India. You stayed here because this was the pious land. And that was wonderful in one respect. But given that Lord Chaitanya said his name would be spread in every town and village, someone had to take the risk. And someone had to have at least a vision. The vision originated with Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who grasped that there was a reality to having the Lord's names chanted in every town and village. So much so, he envisioned that the members of these foreign towns and villages would return to the land of Nadia and would be seen there in Nadia chanting, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. And that was rather interesting, because at that time in the early to mid 1800s, you know, international travel was not a common occurrence. There was no really economical or practical means for that. You know, so then he passed that vision on to his son, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And by the inconceivable compassion and mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that message was passed on to a young man who was recently married, who became His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami through the Prabhupada. And his arrival on a very wet, cloudy, foggy morning in September 17th of 1965 in Boston. This is the beginning of the new chapter in Gaudiya Vaishnava history. And for all of us who forever become his followers, his students, his followers, that day and that moment also changed our lives. All of you are sitting here, your life has been changed by that moment. Sometimes, you know, people who are interested in architecture, they'll contemplate who built the house, who built the, you know, who created this building, and they're interested in the dynamics of that architectural establishment, and somewhat of the person who was the architect behind it. So we have Srila Prabhupada, a spiritual architect who is responsible for, at this point, over 420 temples, I'm told, around the world. And the architect of hundreds and thousands and millions of lives. Lives that were lost, bewildered, stolen by illusion in one form or the other, who have come, returned to a point of sanity due to the Krishna consciousness movement. And for those fortunate souls, of whom there are so many, that were already in a pious mode, in a mode of goodness lifestyle, but still drifting, he gave direction. So we have much to be grateful for, much to be thankful for. And we should really consider deeply the personality, the architecture behind all of this. There are many saintly people in this world. There have been saintly people in the past, and there will be saintly people in the future. But among these saintly people, who has actually done something that is so significant as to change the course in history and create a spiritual movement that will eventually be a shelter for, it is already a shelter, but a recognized shelter, a tangible shelter into the future as Kali Yuga progresses. When Parasaram killed all these Kshatriyas 21 times over, caused a certain stability at the time. But the emergence of Kali Yuga has created a situation that far exceeds even that situation. India is considered to be one of the few remaining lands of piety. But I can see myself, since first coming here in 1970 to this date, how quickly, how swiftly, how ruthlessly Kali Yuga is acting. Many times when I'm traveling from one place to the other through Bombay or Delhi, Calcutta, you feel bewildered. Am I in India? Am I in New York? Am I in London? Because the mood is so different than it was. And I remember Srila Prabhupada, how he left India. In 1965, he was living in Sri Vrindavan Dham in Radha Damodar Temple. You go to Vrindavan now, and there's high-rise, multi-story buildings with dorm, you know, security gates and elevators. The land where the cows and the peacocks were walking is covered with big buildings. You don't even see peacocks anywhere near Vrindavan Temple anymore. They used to be there. And the Yamuna River was so beautifully wandering through Vrindavan. And now it's dammed up, it's filled with all kinds of pollution. And they're trying to enforce a bridge across the river so the people can easily invade Vrindavan in their big, big cars. At that time, it was hardly any cars entered. There was just a few little rickshaws. There was no big sound speakers except on a special occasion. And the electricity only worked. In 1963, Srila Prabhupada told us they first put electricity in Vrindavan. So it wasn't consistent. It was 2 or 3 hours a day, sporadically. Such a peaceful, gentle place. And Srila Prabhupada was there in Radhadamodar temple, gazing out on the samadhis, taking inspiration from Srila Rupa Goswami. And he was willing to leave all of that behind, just to bring the message of Mahaprabhu to the forefront and to the attention of the world. And we are the beneficiaries of that most selfless sacrifice that he offered at an advanced age. So he's not just another saintly person. In order to actually fulfill this mission, he had to be empowered by the Supreme Lord. This is a fact that is stated in the Shetanishetamitra, which it states that if one is to be successful in preaching the Sankirtan movement, they must be empowered by the Supreme Lord. So Srila Prabhupada, in this empowerment, is understood to be Shaktivesh Avatar, one who is empowered for a specific mission by the Supreme Lord. Srila Prabhupada himself states, "I have not done anything wonderful. If it appears that I have done something wonderful, it is only that I have followed the instruction of my spiritual master, and I have not deviated or changed anything." This is actually a very important instruction for all of us who are coming as the caretakers of the Hare Krishna movement. Srila Prabhupada followed his spiritual master's instructions and did not change anything. And he expects the same of us. He once told us that if even one person comes and changes even one word of what I have instructed you, the whole thing will be spoiled. No. So we have a great legacy that is coming into our care. Many of us who were there in the beginning are departing. And just like the head of the house hands his affairs over to his children, Srila Prabhupada handed his affairs over to us, and we in turn are handing the affairs over to all of you. So my humble request is to accept this responsibility in a very mature manner, study Srila Prabhupada's books very carefully, and do not deviate from his instructions, as he did not deviate from his spiritual master's instructions. I would like to end with a small... I won't correct what he said, Srila Prabhupada said, but I will just relate with the exact words what he did say. Many times we are asked as disciples of Srila Prabhupada, what are the most memorable or the most profound message or instructions? And in one level I will say that it's hard to quantify, this is more important, this instruction or this experience was more important, because Srila Prabhupada at every moment was giving us instructions great and small, to guide us back home, back to Godhead. But the situation that he was referring to happened in Mayapur, at a time when Mayapur was yet to be developed. At the time, there was only rice paddies, and it was very beautiful, and electricity was very rare. It was really rural, and it's, now you hear the green, you hear the word green is a big buzzword, but really Mayapur was really green at that time, just rice paddies. Bhaktisiddhanta Road was a dirt road, and there weren't any little tin shops, you know, there weren't the chai wallas, or there wasn't any wallas. It was just the, you know, Gaudiya Math temples. And then by the inconceivable vision of Srila Prabhupada to fulfill the vision of Srila Bhaktivinoda, we acquired this land. So ISKCON at that time consisted of rice paddies in one little thatched roof shack. And we held a big festival there. We thought it was big. At least 50 of us attended from different parts of the world. And we thought that was big at the time. Living in tents. That became very wet when it rained. And we had one source of water. It was a hand water pump. That is still there in front of that. I think I saw it this time in front of the original Bhajan Kutir where Srila Prabhupada resided. So as his cook, I also had to do house cleaning and shopping. But they didn't have any shopping in Mayapur. So that meant you had to take a boat and go to across the river to Navadvip, and nothing was easy. Nothing's ever easy in this material world, even when you're trying to serve the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Guru. Nothing is ever easy. So I'm just mentioning that in case sometimes people get bewildered. They come to spiritual life and they're thinking everything's going to be real smooth. And actually, you know, it can be really smooth when the consciousness is corrected. But as long as the consciousness is a little bit out of kilter, things will be a little out of kilter, or even a lot out of kilter. So it was, I'm there with my husband, who is Srila Prabhupada's secretary. I think you all know His Grace, Sundar Prabhu. And we had a small daughter, Saraswati Devi, who was around 3 years old at that time. So I'm the mother, I'm the wife, and I'm the cook of Srila Prabhupada. And living in a tent without any, you know, we didn't have any facilities to speak of. So it was somewhat difficult. And we also didn't have much money, you know. So even though I'm cooking for Srila Prabhupada, when I would go to the treasurer to get Lakshmi to do the shopping, it was really tough because the duty of the treasurer is to guard the treasury. So he has one word that's very prominent, and it's no. He would ask, I need this much, no. And then, you know, back and forth. So that was like kind of the starting of the day. And then I'd have to get on this boat to Navadvip, and these people were just very hostile and trying to, you know, because we were basically the first group Western people they had seen, and they're just thinking, wow, they must, you know, they were imagining they were going to get rich and retire from us. So they would exploit, you know, exploit the prices. But my treasurer had only given me enough for the local price. So there would be a really big fight to get on that boat and cross the river to go shopping. And on the other side, there was more fights with the rickshaw wala to go to the sabji market, with the sabji wallas, with the fruit wallas, with the dude wallas, with every wala. So the whole morning was like a battle. And then I'd come back and the same thing all over again. And I would have to cook. There was a little bucket with some rocks in it that I would put some cow dung and whatever else I could get to make a fire. And there was one kerosene stove that you would pump it up, light a match, and it would blow up in your face. And this is what I had to cook with, you know. I had one little knife on a stand, a foot knife. You know, there was no nice counter with a sink. There was one bucket with water in it, which I had to share with Srila Prabhupada's servant, who used it to also heat the water for Srila Prabhupada's bath after his massage. So he would take one of my sources of heat to heat the water and my source of water. So things were quite tightly balanced at that point. So my meditation every single day was in my mind, just not only day, even at night, I'd be sleeping thinking, how can I please Srila Prabhupada? How can I please him? And I really wanted to do things perfectly according to his standard and his desire. So this was the meditation. And each day I'm thinking, how can this, you know, I hope this is right. And he would tell me some small detail about the cooking, you know. And it seemed to me that each day there was something that wasn't quite right. So along with all the other issues, taking care of husband and child and the shopping, I started thinking, I'm not doing this very well. There's always something wrong, and maybe I shouldn't even be doing it. Maybe somebody else should be doing it. Because the goal was to satisfy the spiritual master, and it didn't seem I was doing that in a very efficient manner. So I had the idea that I'll get somebody else to cook for him. That would be the best solution. So as soon as I thought that, I actually started feeling a little less stressed out. And I thought, the next day, I'll tell him that I'm going to get someone else to cook for him, and that will solve the problem of my mistakes. So it so happened, the next day I found out that his godbrothers were coming to lunch. So I thought, well, for sure he won't have me cook today anyway, because these men are coming. And in fact, there had been a lot of criticisms about the Western devotees being in Mayapur, but one of them was that there was a female cooking for Srila Prabhupada. That some mild criticism, and it had reached our ears. So I thought, under the circumstances, I certainly won't be cooking today, so I'll tell him tomorrow. And just as I'm thinking like that, I hear that he's calling me, so I entered, and he just started telling me what he wanted for lunch that day. So I thought, okay, well, I'll cook today, but I'll tell him tomorrow that I'm going to get another cook. So another devotee, His Grace Anand Prabhu, who was a very, very saintly elderly Vaishnav, he cooked for the other guests who were coming. But I cooked for Srila Prabhupada. And when I was finished, I was expecting, normally I would bring him his plate, that was normal, but I thought today probably somebody else would take it, but nobody came to take it, so I understood I was going to have to bring that plate in. So there was a little burlap sack that served as a curtain between the front part of the kutir, where His Divine Grace would sleep and eat and meet people, and the very small space in the back that was used for his various services. So I lifted up that curtain and I saw Srila Prabhupada sitting at the end of the kutir. And once again, I have to say, he was glowing. He was very effulgent. And sitting on each side of him, as I remember, there were four godbrothers. So they were two and two, and he was at the end. And I remember very quickly thinking, he's like a diamond. And when you see a diamond, just in the normal, a little diamond in your hand, it's very beautiful. It's a diamond, and there's a value to a diamond that's beyond compare. But when you place a diamond in a setting, the setting enhances the beauty of the diamond. So I was feeling like that, that Srila Prabhupada, in this setting, with his two godbrothers, two and two on each side, that was like the setting, and he was like this beautiful diamond. But I was feeling very intimidated to enter that room. So I took my sari and I completely covered myself, like you know, you could say Muslim style. You couldn't see any of my body. And I was on my elbows, so my hands were reaching out from, and I'm on my knees. I didn't walk in, you know, it was like on my hands and knees, but because my hands had the plate, I'm on my elbows. And I entered that room and I went up to Srila Prabhupada like that, and I put the plate down and I started to back out. And I heard him say, "Yes, she cooks for me." And I criticize her. But the minute he said that, the defect in my consciousness was revealed. Because although I hadn't said anything at all to him, he understood that I had a defect in my consciousness. And by that defect, he was able to understand how to correct me. So by using this word criticism, he immediately corrected me. Because I was thinking, I want to please him, I want to please him. So he was telling me each day, he was correcting small things. Perhaps you can say they were small things, but because I was in my mind and heart thinking how to please him, he was giving the correction. If you want to please somebody, then it means doing it exactly how they would desire. But I was receiving as criticism. That was my defect. And I was mis-evaluating the role of the spiritual master. So he said, "Yes, she cooks for me and I criticize her." But then he said, "But she would slit her throat for me, and I would do the same for her." So he was speaking about me, and that was true. But he was also speaking about all of us, because it's exactly how it was. We could do anything and go anywhere fearlessly because we were following the most fearless leader. And he could ask us to do anything, and we would, without question, do it. Not because we had become zombies, or because we had no mind of our own left, but because we understood that here was a pure devotee of the Lord, and he was offering to take us back to Godhead. And anything he might ask of us was only a small indication of what we could do to serve him and please him. And by doing so, we might, maybe in this lifetime, make it closer back to Godhead by pleasing him. That he had no selfish motive, no selfish intention in his entire body. That he was only giving us pure, unalloyed love. And it was love that we had never experienced before, not even from our parents or anyone else. So we were willing to serve him. Yes, we were sold out, but we were sold out to his love. So he said that about me, but it was really about all of us. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschakya Deshakarine. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mavati Devi. What Mavati Devi has shared with us is very much the spirit and the power that brought the path of bhakti to the world and to each of our hearts. Srila Prabhupada, we learn from such narrations because he gave in such a totally selfless, compassionate spirit. He conquered people's hearts. And they wanted to do anything and everything to assist him. I have heard some recordings of Srila Prabhupada here in Bombay, where he was speaking to some very wealthy industrialist people. And he was saying, really, what is bhakti? Very humbly, honestly, he told that he left India with 40 rupees, which at that time was equivalent to $7. But he couldn't exchange it, because in those days no one heard of a rupee. No one wanted a rupee in the Western world. Some years later, when he returned to India, he still had the same 40 rupees. 38 days on a cargo ship. When he arrived in Boston Harbor on that foggy day that Mavati Devi was telling us about, he signed a letter to Krishna, a beautiful prayer. Your insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So he was explaining like this. When he came to the Western world, America, which at that time was the wealthiest country on the planet, hardly any Indians were in America. The first Indian I ever met in my life was at the border of India. And it was not a very good experience. He was in a very strange land. And all of his followers, most of them were coming from middle class upper class families. By Indian standards, most of the families of those followers of Prabhupada were tremendously wealthy in those days. And Srila Prabhupada had nothing material to give them. He was living in the Bowery, a ghetto of New York. He had nothing material. His Holiness Mukunda Maharaj and his then wife Janaki Devi, they arranged for Prabhupada to get a little storefront on Second Avenue in the Lower East Side, because he had no place to live. He had nothing. He was 70 years old. He was just giving Krishna, giving Krishna, and giving Krishna. He was glowing with Krishna's grace. And it manifested through his words, through his glance, through his smile, through his gestures. He had nothing else but Krishna. He was telling these industrialists in Bombay, I started like that. I was a beggar who hardly knew their language, an old man, and now they are doing anything for me. Opening centers, building temples. I'm not good with numbers, but Prabhupada told these people what the expenditures were every day in his society. So many lakhs of rupees, he said, we are spending every day. And hundreds of people, young, wealthy, American families, will do anything for me. They were impressed. Because usually to start a business, you need some initial investment to grow. But Prabhupada was doing so much for so many people, so many centers, so many temples, so many books. And what was his investment? Malati Devi told us. He simply repeated the words of his Gurudev with total faith and with total compassion for all of us. And that inspired the devotees to leave their beautiful homes and sleep on the floor with 15 other people on the same floor. In the winter, with no heat. And the winter in New York is pretty cold. Snow, way below zero Celsius style. Eating off little pieces of plastic. They would just have plastic paper they used for plates. They couldn't afford plates. And they were happy. Not only happy, they were in ecstasy. So happy that anyone who saw them wanted to do whatever they were doing. And after just a couple years, every temple that was opening was overflowing with devotees in America and Europe. Prabhupada had nothing material to give them. But he gave them Krishna's love. He gave them his compassion. And everyone understood there is nothing more valuable. There is no greater treasure than this. They were willing to give everything and anything to receive it. And they did. Srila Prabhupada said that Malati Devi was willing to die for him and he was willing to die for her. And he meant that literally, because it was true. And although Malati Devi is saying he meant that for all of us, he did. but he especially meant it for her. He was willing to do that for all of us. That is true. He was willing. But the question is, are we willing to do it for him like Malati Devi was and is? While I was in Sri Mayapur Dham, I received news that two of our very beloved devotees from our congregation passed away from this world. I would like to say something about them. Bhakti Rasa Mataji. Who can understand what a personality she is? She is the mother of Mahaprabhu. The mother-in-law of Palika Devi, mother of Rohini Nandan Prabhu, and mother-in-law of Devi Priya Devi, grandmother of Shamadasi, Giri Govardhan Prabhu, Brinda Manjari Devi, and Baladev, and many others also. And from Mahaprabhu, by his inspiration, Sahadev Prabhu, Radha Krishna Prabhu, and so many others came to the path of bhakti. By Satchidananda Prabhu, through him, people like Devamrita Prabhu, Ananda Vrindavan Prabhu, Yudhisthira Prabhu, Sri Gauranga Prabhu. And from them, people like Gauranga Prabhu, Radhisham Prabhu. So a lot has come from Bhakti Ras Mataji. She's kind of like the mother of the universe. So gracious, so devotional. And I believe, you know, her natural devotion, although through her son Mahaprabhu it was very crystallized and focused, you know, to pure bhakti and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But her spirit of devotion, her spirit of religious, genuine religious feeling is very much a foundation that made Mahaprabhu so receptive and Rohini Nandan Prabhu. She lived to see all of this, generations of great devotees, through the ups, through the downs, which naturally come in life. And in her 90s, with her relatives, her children, grandchildren, chanting the holy names around her in Bhaktivedanta Hospital, Krishna took her. His Holiness Mahavishnu Goswami Maharaj, who was also somewhere around his 90s, great saint, Prabhupada follower, Sanskrit scholar, incredible scholar of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He hated hospitals. He would never allow his devotees to bring him to a hospital. Even in emergencies, he was very reluctant. He ordered them, don't bring me to any hospital. But then he came to Bhaktivedanta Hospital. He said, this is not a hospital. This is a holy place. And he was in a holy place. He was in a holy place, and when it was understood that he was going to die very soon, not die, but he was going to leave this world, there was no turning back, he told his disciples, I want to leave my body in Bhaktivedanta Hospital. Because that is Vrindavan, that is a holy place. So Bhakti Ras Devi, she departed surrounded by devotees chanting the holy name in a holy place. And with the tears of our gratitude and love for her, we take a moment to pray to Krishna to shower his infinite blessings upon her. In Krishna consciousness, the society Prabhupada has attracted is so full of variegatedness. One day, a 90-some-year-old great-grandmother left us. And then there was a brahmachari who was probably in his 31 years old, young brahmachari, from the village of Nigri, the town of Nigri, actually. And he became a brahmachari, very enthusiastic, very devoted, loved to serve, loved to chant. And the test of a person's real qualities of devotion is often when there's difficulties. So he was diagnosed with a terrible, ferocious form of cancer. And he would die very soon. But from the moment he got the news, throughout, he was blissful. Never complained. He was just happy that he was Krishna conscious, happy with everything he had in his life. Very simple person. And whenever I would come to Bhaktivedanta Hospital to see him, he was always smiling. He was very much like Stoka Krishna Prabhu. Always smiling, always happy, just wanting to hear about Krishna, wanting to talk about Krishna, wanting to hear the holy names. He was one of the happiest people I ever met, even when he was at the last stages of cancer. It was quite incredible. He was absolutely detached. He used to tell me, I don't care if I die. It doesn't matter. I'm eternal. All I care about is that I'm serving. That's what he would say to me, and he meant it. When I was in Mayapur, I was told that he only had some hours to live. So I spoke to him on the phone. And he sounded so blissful. He kept saying, thank you, Maharaj, thank you, thank you. And everything I'd say, he would go, you know, such a blissful voice, he would blurt out, Jai! I'd say, Rohini Tanaya, I'm just so grateful for your life of devotion. And he'd say, Jai, thank you! I said, Krishna's with you. Have no fear. He said, Jai, thank you. And they told me he only had hours to live. He was aggressively in the state of active dying, medically. And everything I said to him, he was fully conscious. He answered the same way, Jai, thank you. But he screamed it in the phone. It wasn't a whisper. He was blissful. And I was told that he told the devotees his last wish was he could see the new temple in Nigri, because that's where Krishna attracted his heart, and that's where he dedicated his life to service. And the deities are about to be installed there in just a couple of weeks. He wanted to go to the Nigri temple, the place where Krishna captured his heart, the place where he served Krishna and Prabhupada. And devotees were saying, no, no, you can't survive driving. It's about 2.5-3 hours drive. And meanwhile, the devotees were there, and my very dear worshipable god sister Yamuna Devi Prabhu, she came down from her room in the hospital to meet him. And Govinda Prabhu was telling me that he was laying in his back on his bed in a state of active dying, where everything in the body is shutting down. Very traumatic situation. He couldn't talk then, hardly. This is after I spoke to him. And he was telling the devotees he wanted to come down off his bed. But he couldn't speak it. He was just like motioning and trying to say, I want to come down. They were saying, no, you can't come down. Everything in your body is finished. You can't come down. You have to stay in your bed. And he was insisting, demanding that he wanted to come down from his bed. And the reason? Because our worshipable god sister, Yamuna Devi, was sitting on a chair that was lower level than his bed. And he couldn't tolerate being on a higher level than such a dear disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He was not only willing, he was insisting whatever pain, even if it meant his death, he had to offer proper honor and respect to her. And soon after that, he really wanted to go to Nigri. So it is, even whatever, the devotees had to fulfill his wish. So they put him in the vehicle and drove to Nigri. And all the devotees that he came to Krishna consciousness with, that he served with, they were all there waiting for him. And he entered the temple room in front of the deities. The devotees had a big, beautiful kirtan, and he was having the darshan, and all the fulfillment of his, he was just so happy. And there was the evening arati was happening. About an hour passed. In the temple with all of his beloved god brothers, god sisters, well wishers, chanting the holy names, Krishna took him. Such a beautiful departure. Malati Devi told us Srila Prabhupada said, she's willing to die for me, and I'm willing to die for her. And this also means she's willing to live for me, and I'm willing to live for her. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote that Vaishnavas die to live and live to spread the holy name around. In the Bhakti Ratnakara,
by Narahari Chakravarti. He tells the story of Raghava Pandit giving a tour of Vrindavan to Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya. They're doing a whole parikrama. And he's explaining each place. It's all documented. And they came to one quite lonely part called Nandagat, in a very secluded part of Brajbhumi on the bank of Yamuna River. And they came to a little hut of leaves. And he told the story that Jiva Goswami lived here. And then he told why. Just a few days after Jiva Goswami came to Vrindavan for the first time, in a very quiet place in the town, in the village of Vrindavan, he was with his uncle Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami was writing Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It was a very hot day. Jiva Goswami was standing at his side with a fan of leaves, fanning his Gurudev, Rupa Goswami, to relieve him of the heat. At that time, one very, very advanced, powerful, empowered Vaishnav scholar, he came to meet them. And he saw Rupa Goswami writing. He said, "Can I see your Mangala Charana?" Rupa Goswami showed it to him. He said, I will edit this for you." Rupa Goswami was so grateful. He said, "Yes, please edit it for me." So he took the document, or the manuscript, and went to the bank of the Yamuna. Meanwhile, Jiva Goswami, he said to Rupa Goswami, "I want to get some water from you from the Yamuna." So he went there and he met this great Vaishnav scholar. He said, "Why do you want to edit this book? What's wrong with it?" He said, "In the Mangala Charana, look, it says like this, this, this. I can improve it like this, this, and this." And Jiva Goswami said, "It doesn't require improvement." And he explained the reasons. When this great scholar heard Jiva Goswami's explanation, he was thinking, "This person is brilliant." So immediately he got up, brought the manuscript back to Rupa Goswami and said, "This manuscript doesn't need any editing. And who is that young boy? Who is that young man?" Rupa Goswami said, "He's my nephew. He just a few days ago came from our village." He said, "He's a tremendous scholar. He's brilliant. He's so devoted." And then he left. A few minutes later, Jiva Goswami came back to the tree that Jiva Goswami was sitting under. And Rupa Goswami asked him, "What happened?" "He was going to edit my book, and he came and brought it back. What did you say to him?" And Jiva Goswami explained very humbly. Rupa Goswami, with a soft voice, he chastised Jiva Goswami. He said, "He's a great Vaishnav. Out of love for me, he wanted to do some seva and edit my book. And because you have no proper patience, you didn't appreciate that. Vrindavan is not for a person who has any kind of pride. You should leave Vrindavan, you should go home, and only return when you learn the art of patience." Jiva Goswami took this very seriously. Started walking home. Home is in Bengal.
about 1,000 kilometers away.
But on his way,
he came to Nandagat. And there he decided he should do tapasya to atone for his pride and try to remove it by surrendering to Sri Krishna. And he made his residence in this very simple little hut made out of dried leaves. Some people say he lived in a crocodile home. Maybe he had two residences. And there he was chanting the holy names constantly to purify himself. He took it so seriously. One day, Sanatan Goswami came to that village close to Nandagat. Sanatan Goswami was like the guru for all of Vrindavan. He was so kind, so loving, so gentle, and yet so learned and renounced. This type of balance is all attractive. For a person to be scholarly and at the same time more humble than a blade of grass, for a person to be very renounced and at the same time to be so gentle and respectful to everyone, and really care for everyone. When he would go to a village, he would travel all around Vrindavan just with a little begging bowl, and the whole village would come to greet him. It was a festival. Sanatana Goswami's coming. And he would go to their house, and they would give him some milk from their cows, and he would say, "How are your cows? And how many calves did this cow give? And how much milk does she give? And how are your crops growing? And did you get your daughter married yet?" All those kind of simple questions. Because they were simple farmers. And he gave them pure Krishna consciousness and inspiration just by being so kind to them. So he was asking all about how things are in the village. And one of them said, "There's a young Swami, a sannyasi, who's living here. We don't know what to do. He's living in this little hut of leaves. And he hardly eats anything, even if we offer him. He doesn't eat. He just eats some fruits and roots that grow wild. Very small quantity. And the only other thing he'll eat is we'll give him some wheat flour and he'll mix it up with a little water and eat it. Just a tiny portion. And day and night, he's weeping and crying the holy names of Krishna. So when Sanatana Goswami heard, he understood this must be Jiva Goswami. So he went to this little hut of leaves. And there he walked in. And when Jiva Goswami saw him, Jiva Goswami with great humility, he was so weak, he was emaciated then. He offered his dandavats and took the dust from the feet of Sanatana Goswami. He said, "What are you doing here?" And Jiva Goswami told him, "Because of my pride, I offended a Vaishnava. And therefore, Rupa Goswami told me I had to leave until I gave it up. And I'm praying, I'm crying out to Krishna to take that pride away from me." So Sanatana Goswami went back to Vrindavan village and told Rupa Goswami everything. He said, "Our nephew Jiva Goswami, he is so physically weak, I have seen.
even if a gentle breeze comes off the Yamuna, his whole body shakes.
So Rupa Goswami walked all the way there, many, many miles, to Nandagat, and saw his nephew and his disciple, and personally brought him back to Vrindavan. And everyone in Vrindavan was so happy to see Jiva Goswami's back. Rupa Goswami personally nursed him back to good health by preparing nice prasad, giving him nice herbs and whatever else to make him healthy and happy. And sometime later, a Digvijay Pandit, great scholar, who was challenging others in debate, because in those days, the great sport of India was debate. In the ancient scriptures, you will not read anything about cricket. We just read about debate. And this man was a champion debater in scripture. And he challenged Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami said, "You are more learned than me. There's no use in debating me. You win." He said, "Well, if actually you are admitting defeat from me, then you must sign my Jaya Patri, which is a certificate, an official certificate, where you have to write, 'I have been officially defeated by the Digvijay Pandit.'" So Rupa Goswami signed it, that the Digvijay Pandit has defeated me in debate. And he sent it back to the Digvijay Pandit. And when the Pandit saw that Jiva Goswami actually wrote that, he was so humble, just by seeing the handwriting of Jiva Goswami admitting defeat, his heart completely transformed. And he tore up the certificate and ran to Jiva Goswami and fell at his feet and said, "You have defeated me. I surrender to you." So this is the transformation. So it is this type of culture of taking shelter with humility, patience, devotion, that is the very foundation of bhakti. And it is in this spirit that we can attain all spiritual fortune of prema bhakti when we chant the holy name. Be willing to live and to die for Prabhupada and Krishna. And to know that Krishna reciprocates millions and millions of times over. That is the highest of all truths. Krishna's love for his devotee. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said about his great devotee Haridas Thakur that I am a prisoner in the heart of my devotee. And there's no greater place the Lord would rather be. Thank you very much. And we will have kirtan now. There are some special guests, so many, it's hard to say all of them, but we have Abhay Prabhu, can you stand up please? Where is Abhay Prabhu? Abhay Prabhu is one of the leading most devotees from Bhaktivedanta Matter. He also travels throughout Russia, Siberia, sharing the great message of bhakti with the world. And this year, he will be taking the vows of a sannyasi. Let us welcome him to Radha Gopinath Temple. And we have one of my very, very dear godbrothers, Hare Krishna Prabhu. We were brahmacharis together in 1972. And everyone has their way of expressing their bhakti. Somehow or other, I ended up like this. And he ended up with beautiful children, who are my very dearest friends. We have Baladev Prabhu, who is born in Prabhupada's loving service, and Sarada Sarita, who is in the heavenly regions up there, who is the daughter and son of Hare Krishna Prabhu, and my god sister Marut Devi and Astasaki mothers, and Baladev's good wife Joyce, who is like a goddess of gracious, good qualities. And Lima, yes?
Liam,
who is their very dear friend. Could all of you stand up? Don't fall down now. So grateful they are here. Let us welcome them to Radha Gopinath. And we have three yoga students from Los Angeles, Atmananda Prabhu. Could all of you stand up? They have come to spend so many days with us here, and they're going to go to some holy places in India. We're so grateful that you're here with us. Pray that you are showered with enlightenment and grace wherever you may go. Let us welcome them. And I'm seeing another son of one of my dear godbrothers. You all remember Trinakarta Prabhu? He's come here many, many times. His eldest son, Yudhisthira Prabhu, wonderful, wonderful devotee. Not only was he born within our society of devotion, but like these others, have so much imbibed the real spirit of bhakti. Can you stand up, Yudhisthira Prabhu? And between Yudhisthira Prabhu and Baladev Prabhu, we have two of the best mridanga players in Lord Brahma's creation. Let us welcome them. And of course, we have our resident goddess, Nartaki Devi. I can't welcome you because you're here much more than me. But sometimes things don't make sense, but let us welcome Nartaki Devi. And in Bhaktivedanta Hospital, we have Giridhari Swami Maharaj, Yamuna Devi Prabhu, Dinatarani Devi Prabhu. If they're listening on this broadcast, let us very loudly, so that they don't even have to hear the broadcast, let us welcome them to Huh? Kavaha Mataji is also in Bhaktivedanta Hospital.
So we will perform kirtan. Thank you.